Today's Parenting Great Kids podcast is brought to you by KiwiCo. Friends, KiwiCo creates super cool hands-on projects for kids of all ages that make learning about science, technology, engineering, art, and math fun. KiwiCo's mission is to provide the next generation of innovators with the tools and foundations they need to become creative problem solvers and critical thinkers. Kids can create their own arcade games, construct a hydraulic claw, or tinker with electronics and motors. Friends, I use KiwiCo toys with my grandkids of all ages, and they love them. They're really fun. They're contained in a single box, and they're just wonderfully creative and fun to use with your kids. KiwiCo is offering Parenting Great Kids with Dr. Meg Meeker listeners the chance to try them for free. To redeem this offer and learn more about their projects for kids, visit KiwiCo.com/Meg. That's KiwiCo.com/Meg.
For 30 plus years, I've seen every type of child grow up.
Instead of giving me what I wanted, she gave me what I needed, which was truth.
Don't let emotions win. Let truth win.
Do your very best, and you should have a lot of fun while you do it. And the better you get at something, the more fun you're going to have at something.
You moms and dads are wired with everything you need to be a parent to a great kid.
Welcome to Parenting Great Kids. This is episode number 56, and I'm your host, Dr. Meg Meeker. Today, we'll be talking about reading out loud to your kids. My guest is Sarah McKenzie, author and speaker. She has a podcast and has a very popular blog. Her podcast has reached over 2 million downloads. She is the author of The Read Aloud Family. As always, I'll share my points to ponder for you to start using right away. And parents, as a reminder, don't just download the episodes, click subscribe. Because when you do that, you are joining my parenting revolution, and every new episode will automatically show up in your subscribe list. You won't regret it, I promise. And we'd love for you to write us a review on iTunes and let us know what you think of the podcast. These podcasts are for you. So if there's a topic or a guest you'd like to hear, let me know. Also, not only are we on iTunes, but the Parenting Great Kids podcast is also available in the Google Play Store and on Stitcher. So no matter where you get your podcasts, subscribe today so you won't miss a single episode. Friends, do you get tired of hearing your kids fighting or hearing yelling around the house or feeling like your kids never listen to you or obey you? Sometimes do you feel life is out of control at your house? I get it if you're there. You need to check out my brand new hot off the press course called Discipline with Courage and Kindness. It's on my website. And let me help you bring more order back to your home. And when you do this, you'll have much more fun with your kids. So parents, thanks for listening. This is episode number 56. Stay with us. Now on to my points to ponder. Point number one, set aside 15 minutes a day for family reading. You say, oh, come on, 15 minutes. I don't have that kind of time. Yes, you do. Have everybody turn off their cell phones, turn off their laptops, turn off the television, whatever. And even if you start with just 15 minutes a week, you can gradually work up to 15 minutes a day. During that time, you can either read to your kids or you can have them read to you, or you can play a book on tape. You don't need to all be sitting down looking at each other while you're doing this, but begin to create an environment where you're listening to something together. It sounds harder than it really is. Great times don't just happen in your home. You have to be intentional about them. You can listen to books on tape when you're riding in the car. And rather than tell your kids that this is good for them, make a game of it. Tell them you want to hear their thoughts about a story, or that maybe you get bored driving and you need some entertainment. You want them to talk to you. And the best way to do that is to start to listen to a book on tape. Also, Even if all of your kids don't want to participate in hearing books read out loud, that's okay. Begin reading for 15 minutes with those who'll participate. And I promise you, as it becomes more fun, the others will see it and they'll want to join in too. Point number two, cut out 15 minutes of screen time and gradually replace it with the reading time. At first, kids are going to give you a lot of pushback, particularly your older kids who are used to staring at their phones all day. That's okay. You can deal with pushback in your kids. The reason is they give you so much pushback is because they're used to being entertained without putting any effort into it. And this isn't good for our kids. It's passive entertainment. It's a reliance we foster on them having to be entertained all the time and receive things and not to participate. It's not healthy. Remember, you not only have the right to tear your kids away from their screens, you have the obligation as a good parent to do so. Reading develops their minds in ways that screens can never do. And it develops their imagination. It develops their social skills. It develops their critical thinking. It develops their vocabulary. Across the board, reading helps your kids. And studies show that kids who read a lot routinely score much higher on SATs and PSAT scores in high school. Three, commit to becoming closer to your kids. I know every single one of you wants to have a closer, better relationship with your kids, but you have no idea where to start. Here it is. As Sarah said, reading together or even listening to books together on tape draws you closer to your kids. Why? Kids want a shared experience with their moms and dads and their siblings. They want to feel that there's something that draws you and binds you together. And there's nothing like a shared experience that helps you do this. That's why you hear me talk about camping a lot or going into the woods with your kids, because you overcome obstacles together. So sharing positive experiences, even sharing hard experiences and negative experiences, bonds you together as a family. Kids want to feel that your family comes together as a whole to do something meaningful. And don't be fooled. When your kids first give you pushback, they don't mean it. They're testing you. But when they realize that this is a family activity everybody's needs to do, they quickly learn that they have value as part of your family. And because you spend more time together in the same room, not isolated in different rooms, looking at your phones or your laptops or television, you bond together. Friends, I want you now to listen in on a wonderful conversation I had with my guest, Sarah McKenzie. I know you're going to love it. Well, Sarah, you are a busy mom, a busy professional. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast today.
It is such a pleasure to talk with you. I am happy to be here.
You know, I love your book, The Read Aloud Family. I love your movement and what you're doing and helping parents get back to sort of the basics of connecting with their kids through reading. So I really want to talk about that. You know, you're a busy mom of six children, and you write something that I think every parent can resonate with. You say the possibility that one day my children will be grown and gone, and I might regret the choices I made while raising them terrifies me. I'm acutely aware of how easy it is to slip into the habit of just surviving the day, focusing on getting through. I want to make a meaningful and lasting bond with each of my kids before it's too late. As a busy mother, I struggle to truly connect with each of my kids in a way that will stand the test of time. Boy, oh boy. You know, I felt that way when my kids are growing up. You feel this sort of panicky sense that I want to get everything right. I don't want to make big mistakes. And time is just slipping away. Since you wrote that, how have you, as a busy mom, found a way to connect with your children?
You know, I think this is a fear of so many of us as parents, right? Because we know that parenting our kids is, it's really the most important thing we'll ever do. And so the
yes.
weight of that task starts Thank to just you. Feel yes. really heavy, right? I learned so much. I love it whenever you remind us that what our kids really want and need is us, our time and yeah. our attention and our presence. Because it's so easy, I think, right now, especially with just the way our culture is sort of set up to sign our kids up for more things and run our kids up, you know, around to more activities and do more. And then we end up looking at our kids at the end of the day and realizing, like, I haven't even looked at you or talked to you today.
Right.
And with my kids, I feel that all the time. I'm home with them for so many hours a day. And yet still, at the end of the day, there are some kids that I think, I don't even know what's going on in that child's mind. So the way I think I've found to connect best is through reading aloud. And the reason why, even with my kids who can read on their own, is just because it's simple. It's something I don't have to prepare for. It's something I don't have to pay for. It's something we don't have to go anywhere to do. We can just pull a book off the shelf. It only takes 10 or 15 minutes, but it requires me to be fully present with them just for this short little time, and communicates that that message that you matter to me so much that I'm willing to stop the rest of this crazy world from spinning for 15 right. minutes to just be here with you.
So really, you've started a movement. You've started a very popular podcast and a movement about reading aloud with your children. So you read to them and they read to you. And I'm picturing you standing in your kitchen, getting dinner ready, cleaning dishes, moving stuff around, and one of your kids is sitting at the counter reading to you. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, actually, it's happened a couple of times, but not usually. Usually, it will be a little bit different than that, depending on whatever season we are in. We are in life. Sometimes it means turning an audiobook on in the car on our way to soccer practice or on our way to church or whatever, and we're listening to a story together. A lot of times it's just that bedtime story before bed where we're taking 10 or 15 minutes to enjoy a story with our kids. With my teenagers, there have been times, a lot of times, where I will, you know, pile up the laundry in the living room and everybody's folding and I'm reading aloud to everyone.
Yeah.
Or, just like you just mentioned, I might be making dinner and one of my teens is reading to me. And so I think one of the things we kind of get hung up on is we feel like it's adding another thing to our already really busy schedules. We think, right. I don't have time for that too. But if we can just sort of fit it in an organic way, you know, what yeah. is our, make it fit our family, but just add in this opportunity to be fully present.
You really can. And a lot of times I think parents who are busy and have a lot going on feel so overwhelmed, and they feel like, I can't add one thing. And I think the beauty of reading aloud with your kids and having them read to you is that you really don't need to add. You just need to move something else out of the way. Studies show us is that the average parent spends about 42 minutes per day with a child, but that child spends about 10 hours per day in front of a screen. Every parent knows they don't like that. And they panic about how much screen time their kids are having. And I say, don't panic, act. You know, you're in charge of your kids' screen time. And so what I would encourage parents to do is, I'm sitting here listening to you and sort of envisioning you with your six kids and busy life at home and folding laundry and having people read, is to say, you know, just find 15 minutes, turn off your phone, turn off the screens, and just say, kids, okay, it's quarter to six. From quarter to six to 6 o'clock, it's reading time. Who's going to read? Or I'm going to read. And I will tell you, when you invite kids into family activities and to participate as one of a whole, kids love feeling like they fit in a unit. And so if everybody shares reading time or everybody listens to you read, it makes them feel good. So really, you're just talking about sort of clearing a path, right, in your busy day and saying, find a way to just read out loud to your kids. It's huge in helping your kids bond. And I think, and I'd like to hear your take on this too, my sense is you don't need hours of it every day. Even just 15 minutes a day where you read out loud to your kids can be a game changer in your relationship with them, can't it?
Okay, so the math on this is really interesting, because if you were to read aloud to your kids for 10 minutes every other day, so that only adds up to about 35 minutes a week. Doesn't feel nearly as stressful, right? That adds up over a year to 30 hours, which is a tremendous amount yes. of time to spend yeah. reading with our kids. You know, you could read the entire Chronicles of Narnia in 30 yes. hours, or yes. hundreds of picture books. So I feel like it's one of those things, like probably all the best things in parenting, that are drops in a bucket. You don't get to see the results of it right away. It might not feel life-changing. You know, your kids don't get up from you reading The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe for 10 or 15 minutes, and they're suddenly virtuous, wonderful human beings.
Takes years. But
It's like those drops in a bucket that at the end you can go, this is what we invested in, and it was so worth it. So if we realize we don't have to wait for a 30-minute time chunk, that you're just kind of like, oh, I don't know what to do with that. I mean, how many of us as parents have half an hour where we think, well, I just don't know what to fill that time with? That's usually our problem.
You know, and there's a rule of parenting that I've never seen written, but it's real. And that is, if you spend 10 minutes once a week doing something fun with your kids, they will grow up to say that you spent 2 hours once a week doing something fun with them. There's a multiplication effect. So if you read to your kids 15 minutes even once a week, those kids will say you did it every single day. They wear it as a badge of honor. You write in your wonderful book, The Read Aloud Family, about three benefits of reading aloud to your children. The first is increased vocabulary and sophisticated language patterns. Talk about that.
So this is the primary academic benefit, I think, of reading aloud with our kids. And here's basically what we need to remember. We can't expect to get out of our children what we don't put in. One of my favorite educator leaders says this all the time about writing. We want our kids to be good writers and speakers, but if we don't put good, sophisticated, and grammatically correct language patterns into their brains, we can't expect them to come back out. And if we think of the way that our kids get most of their language, it's either through conversation with either adults or kids, neither of which are grammatically correct and sophisticated, because our conversational English is very it's not grammatically correct. And that's
correct.
Okay. That's
yes.
The way we talk. So they're definitely not getting it from TV, right? Or media of any kind, text messages or social media. So the only place they actually get those strings of language that are grammatically correct and sophisticated are from books. But what happens when kids read to themselves silently, like most of us read, is that the better readers we are, we tend to read a little bit faster. We skip words, those little connector words like the, or, and, words that we don't know how to pronounce. And so what happens is in our brains, we don't actually store those strings of grammatically correct, sophisticated language patterns. But if somebody reads them aloud to us, they read every word in order, and those patterns get stored in our brain in order. And so that's sort of the main benefit of getting those language patterns in through the ear, is that we store the language patterns, and then it becomes more instinctual for our children to write and speak in a way that will serve them well academically and professionally as they grow.
Well, I love it. And, you know, I've seen a number of studies that talk about, kids who read score much higher on standardized tests, SAT tests, ACTs, because of vocabulary, because it really increases your vocabulary. The second benefit you talk about in your book, The Read Aloud Family, to reading out loud, is the ability to make connections. What do you mean by this?
Well, most parents probably know that their kids' teachers are concerned with reading comprehension, right? This is just, it's a fancy way of just talking about our kids being able to read something and connect it to what they already know about the world. And those connections, as they're reading and understanding what the book says, that's reading comprehension. And when we read aloud with our kids, because we can read books they may not be able to read on their own or would not pick up and read on their own, we help them develop this sense of reading comprehension in a very simple, organic way, without having to give them a test, without having to make it a school assignment. For example, most 6 or 7 year olds may not be able to read. Let's just go back to C.S. Lewis. May not be able to read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe on their own, but they can certainly listen to it being read out loud, because our listening comprehension exceeds our reading comprehension. And so we're able to kind of lift our child above their own level and help them make those connections between what they're reading or hearing and all the things they've read or heard before, and improve their reading comprehension.
You know, I love that you keep referencing C.S. Lewis. My husband was an English major in college, and when we started dating in medical school, I kid you not, we would sit in the evenings and he would recite poetry to me, and he memorized tremendous volumes of literature. He memorized The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, which, if anybody's ever read it, it's very complex. It's a beautiful literary work, but it's very, very long. And he would say these things to me, and I will tell you,
no wonder you married him.
Oh, I felt so loved. I felt that, you know, it was better than giving me flowers or taking me out to dinner for him to sit there and to recite these things to me. And I thought that I'd never met a man who could do that. And I thought, he's a keeper.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then after we went on and we got married, we have four kids, they're grown. Every night he would go to our kids and he'd alternate, you know, nights reading to one of them. And to each of our four children, the first thing he read was the Chronicles of Narnia. He read all of the books to each of our children. And I remember he started when they were in first grade. And I said, wait a minute, you know, no, that's way over their head. He said, you know what, I'm just going to do it. And I'll tell you, our kids look back on those times as such sweet bonding time with their dad. That was a gift he gave them that I'm a little envious of, because I didn't give that to them. And they cherish that now as adults. And that's something they really want to give to their kids. So, you know, it was an incredible bonding time between, you know, dad and kids. But it also really challenged them, sort of, because I love what you say. You know, when kids hear stories, they're able to hear better than they are to necessarily read something. So I think they have a lot of pride in their relationship with their dad and talking about what he gave them, that gift. And it happened over years. Let's go on to the third benefit you talk about in reading aloud to our kids, a love for reading. You know, so many times I hear parents say to me, their kids just don't like reading. Particularly boys, they'll say, I can't get my high school son to be motivated to anything. And they'll say, how can I get my 8, 12, or 16-year-old to like reading? What would you say to that parent?
I heard someone recently say, you know, the best way to get your kids to go outside more is to go with them. And I think the same is true for reading. The best way to get your child to read more is to do it with them.
Yes.
We know that modeling is so important, but we feel really, I really feel as a parent raising six kids in today's culture, we feel so pulled and spread thin and pulled in too many directions. A lot of us have sort of let our own reading lives slide or disappear completely because we feel like we don't have time for it. But without that modeling and without our kids seeing every day that reading is something we do for the delight of it, they can't really come to that understanding of books and reading as something you do for pleasure themselves. There's some interesting research that actually shows that kids whose parents think the primary purpose of reading is entertainment, they actually read more and are better readers than kids whose parents think the primary purpose for reading is academic or professional success. Mm-hmm. And so I think this really speaks to the power of delight. If we see reading as something that we do for the delight of it and enjoyment of the written word and enjoyment of sharing a story with someone else, that goes a really long way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love that. I think as I'm listening to you talking here, I think, you know, we think of books as entertainment. I always thought of books as entertainment because I like reading and I like creating and altering the stories in my mind, which is something you can do when you're reading or listening to a book that you can't when you're watching a television program. Mm-hmm. You know, you watch a television program, the main character looks like the person who's playing that. But when you're reading about a main character in a book, you can make that person look any way you want. So you can build a much better story in your mind by listening to stories or reading. So I would strongly encourage parents, you know, if you are going to see book reading and listening as entertainment, turn off the TV, you know, skip the video game or skip the television show or, you know, fold your laptop and let's just all sit and listen. And I would say it might be hard getting going, but I'll guarantee you, just as I learned to love listening to my husband recite poems and stories to me, your kids will love listening to you read, even if they're older kids. So you're not really even just talking to reading to kids who are 5 or 8. You're talking about even reading to kids who are 14 or 15, correct?
Absolutely. And you know, as a parent of teenagers, they're doing that natural thing where they're starting to pull away from you, which is good because they need to do that to become adults, right?
Yeah.
But especially with the pace of our lives in combined with that natural pulling away of them trying to figure out who they are and what they want to do and make and be in this world, it helps to have a very simple way to be present and connect with them and enjoy them. And I just find with my teens, it's really important for me to be able to enjoy their company and to communicate to them. I enjoy your company.
And I will tell you, I think that they want that too. They want to feel that you like their company, that you like the person they are. And I think that sort of saying, hey, come and sit with me for a few minutes while I read, or will you come and read to me while I'm doing this chore or whatever, is just huge in the self-esteem of a child, building a self-esteem because of what it says to your child is, I love being with you and I want to be with you. Parents, I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Sarah McKenzie. We need to take a quick break, but please don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more of my conversation with Sarah McKenzie. Friends, as a busy parent, it's really hard to find time and energy to make sure you're eating well and eating right. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook really healthy and delicious meals at home, no matter how much experience you have in the kitchen. That way, your family can eat better, feel better, and the best part is, skip the grocery store at the same time. Just go to the Sunbasket app and pick from 18 weekly recipes, like fully loaded beef tacos with Mexican simmer sauce. They're paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, Mediterranean, family options, and so much more. Sunbasket works with the best farms and suppliers to bring you fresh and organic produce and responsibly raised meats and seafood. Everything is pre-measured and easy to prep. You can get a healthy and delicious meal on the table in about 30 minutes. Friends, you know who have been listening. I love Sunbasket meals. I eat them all the time. They are convenient, and I worried at first about carbon footprint because there's a lot of mailing back and forth, but not to worry. Everything's recyclable. They show you how to do it. It's really a wonderful system. The flavors they come up with are amazing. Moroccan, Mexican, French, Italian. And I love to cook, and these meals are awesome. There's something for every healthy journey and every busy lifestyle. Go to sunbasket.com/Meg today to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/Meg for $35 off. sunbasket.com/Meg. Support for today's show comes from Third Love. Armed with the measurements of millions of women, Third Love bras are designed to fit real women. I will tell you, friends, when I discovered Third Love, I fell in love with these bras. There's no cutting, there's no tightness, there's no shimmying around to make your bra fit. And best of all, you feel like you wear them all day and you don't even feel like you have a bra on. No more awkward fitting room experiences. With Third Love's Fit Finder Quiz, it helps you identify your breast shape and find styles that fit your body in less than a minute. Just answer a few simple questions. With 60 sizes ranging from AA through G, including half cup sizing, Third Love guarantees a perfect fit, and that's what makes them so great. And Third Love values comfort and quality with straps that don't slip, ultra-soft smoothing fabrics, and lightweight memory foam cups. The labels are even tagless, so they're not itchy. Plus, returns and exchanges are always free. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now, they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/Meg now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/Meg for 15% off. Your book, The Read Aloud Family, is beautifully written, and so kudos to you. But one of your chapters begins, and you're talking about debunking myths that we believe about reading. And your chapter says, words the author, Andrew Peterson, sometimes it is necessary to paint the sky black in order to show how beautiful is the prick of light. When a child reads the last sentence of my stories, I hope he or she drifts to sleep with a glow in their hearts and a warmth in their bones, believing that all shall be well and all shall be well and all manner of things shall be well. You know, reading that makes me want to just keep reading. And then you go on in that, right after that, and you describe five myths that we parents believe about reading. The first myth, if you want reading aloud to make a difference, you need to do it a lot. Tell me why you wrote that.
We think that for us to make a big impact on our kids, those things are going to take a lot of time, or at least I should just speak for myself here. I, as a parent, feel like the things that are going to make the biggest impact on my kids are probably the harder, more difficult parts of parenting. Sometimes I feel like the things that are simple or delightful or that I enjoy a lot as parenting are either, I don't know if cheating is the right word, but they just feel too simple to make a big difference.
Yes.
And so we tend to make our jobs almost harder on ourselves, right? So I think to myself, well, I want to read aloud to my kids, but if I can't do it every day or if I can't do it for a half an hour at a time, it's not going to make a difference. And I think it helps to remember that whole 10 minutes every other day ends up being 30 hours over the course of a year and can make a tremendous difference. So really what I was trying to do in this whole section, section two, that starts with the chapter on myths that you're talking about, is help parents, regardless of where they are in their read aloud journey with their kids, whether they have all young kids and they're reading at bedtime every night, or they have just teenagers and it has been a decade since they've read aloud to them, or they're somewhere in between, or they're like me. I have 4.5-year-old twins and I also have a 16-year-old daughter. So you're kind of spread out over the ages and the different seasons of parenting all at once. Wherever you are, whatever is keeping you from connecting with your kids, what myths are holding us back? What lies are we believing that are keeping us from actually doing this thing of reading aloud with them?
Well, I love that. You know, whether it's reading or it's something else, we really feel that if we don't do it a lot or we don't do it a certain way, it doesn't count. And it's kind of like going on a diet. You know, I feel like, well, if I can't follow a strict 1,200 calorie a day diet and make it work for 7 days in a row, I should not do it. Well, okay, but why don't you just try, you know, stop dessert or cut out one thing or try to make it simple, because that's how you have the greatest success, is if you just start with a little bit and let yourself off the hook. Just do as best as you can. The other myth you write about, which I think is fabulous, because I found myself reading these going, oh yeah, I believe that. The myth, light books don't count. Boy, oh boy, I was all about that. You know, something has to be serious. It has to be educational. It has to have a good moral. It has to be, you know, biblically based. It has to be, and I had all these parameters that books had to meet if I felt they were worth reading. But you say, just read. Just read a silly book. That light books do count. Is that true for kids of all ages?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think if we think about reading aloud with our kids as parents, what we're trying to do are two main things. One is get those grammatically correct, sophisticated language patterns in through the ear. And if we're reading from a book, we'll have a better odds. It's not always guaranteed, depending on what you're reading. But we'll have better odds of getting those grammatically correct, sophisticated language patterns in, whether we're reading them The Boxcar Children or we're reading, you know, Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
Number two is it's that shared experience. That's the key there with connecting with their kids. Even if we're at odds with each other, even if we've had a rough day, this is especially true with the older our kids get, but I also find it to be true with my really young kids. If we're having a hard day, which, you know, it happens because we're, as families, we're all up in each other's business all the time. And
right.
So we're it's kind of like a hot house for us to kind of butt heads and rub up against each other in a bad way. So when we sit down to read, we end up being back on the same team again. You know, we're cheering for the same characters. We're holding our breath at the same times. We're crying. We're laughing. We're on the same team again, and we didn't have to do anything except for step into the story together.
Right. Shared experience. And books are so wonderful because you're sharing stories. And I think that stories teach us so much about life and so much about ourselves. And there's so many great principles. You know, if you look at, you know, just the New Testament, and part of my frustration in reading a lot of the New Testament is know, people would come up to Jesus and they'd ask him questions, and he'd answer in the most peculiar way. He never just said, yes, that's right, and let me tell you why, or no, I disagree with you, that's a bad thing to do. He would tell a story. And often the story was a little obtuse. It didn't quite make sense. So you had to go back and back and back. But I think as you share talking about stories, it really teaches you and the other person that you're sharing the story with some great lessons. And sometimes you dig together to figure those stories out. So talk about how listening to stories in a book can really help you form a deeper bond with the person that you're reading the book with.
So there is some really interesting research, more recent research. They did some functional MRIs that show that when people read fiction, it triggers in the brain, it triggers a very similar response to actually living through whatever event we're reading about. Now, I mean, I'm not going to go as far as to say, of course, that, you know, reading about an event is the same as being there, because we know that this can't be true, right? But as parents, I think what we really want is for our kids to be prepared for whatever life throws at them, to love others well, to be able to see from a different point of view, to be able to treat others with compassion. And this is the way I like to think about it. Every time we read a story, we are basically slipping on the shoes of someone else and walking a mile in those shoes. Mm. So if we're reading a story set in a different country or a different culture or a different way of life, we get to see life from a different point of view. We get to feel like what it would feel like to be homeless, to be any of the different things we can imagine that we encounter in books. And this makes a lot of sense, I think, because every time we read a story, if we're walking a mile in someone else's shoes, if we read hundreds of stories over our children's childhood, then we're giving them hundreds of hours of practice walking in a mile in the shoes of someone else. And then they can become those adults who see the person honking at them behind them in the car or behind them in the grocery line or sitting on the corner downtown. And they see those people as images of God, as people who have their own desires and fears and their own stories. And they understand what it might feel like, and maybe a little bit better than they would have if they had never encountered a story from another person's perspective. Well, you talked about in this way that Jesus responded with sort of cryptic stories, right? They kind of remain a little shrouded in mystery. And it reminds me of in 2 Samuel, so like back in the Old Testament, we have King David, who is basically just living a whole bunch of bad behavior, right? He's making a series of bad choices, and he's sort of become lost in his own world. He's failing to see what his own actions are doing to the lives of all the people around him. He basically can't see his life or what it's become. So God sends this prophet, Nathan, to go talk to him. And what I find so interesting is that when Nathan, the prophet, arrives in the king's presence, he doesn't begin by delivering a lesson or a lecture or telling David what he's doing wrong. He starts with a story.
Yeah.
He says, there was two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. And this story reaches King David where nothing else could. You know, people were already telling him, you're making mistakes, you're doing the wrong thing. But he drops his defenses from the story. I think that's where stories meet us, where nothing else can.
Right. You know, you're absolutely right, because you jump into it, and that's a beautiful illustration. I love that you did that. You know, by Nathan telling David that story, I mean, David was incensed when he heard the story, and Nathan was telling him a story about himself, what David was doing. And it's so beautiful. So really being in stories gives you insight into yourself as a person. It really helps kids develop empathy, because that's what you're talking about, identifying with characters, walking a mile in their shoe in the book and pulling them in. And I think that stories that you read or that you hear that are being read to you pull you in on a much deeper level than you can be pulled in via the screen. There's something that feels very three-dimensional about hearing a story. And watching a story on a screen is so two-dimensional. And I think that often the sounds, the people, the experiences are super sensational. Surround sound, for instance, is hyper real. to me. You know, if you're in a movie theater and you listen to rain and it's very loud, it's often louder than you'd ever really hear rain, even if you were in a tent in a stormy day. So there's something that feels more real about listening to a story or reading a story in a book than you would experience from television. Talk to us a little bit about conversations that can erupt between parent and child when you're reading.
Well, I remember reading The Wonderful Wizard of Oz with my three older kids when they were, I think they're about 8, 6, and 4 or somewhere around those ages. And I had never read the book before. And so I was really pleasantly surprised that it was so much more delightful, I thought, than the movie, which terrified me as a kid.
Yeah.
So I was reading this book and we get to the part where the Tin Woodman and the Scarecrow are arguing about whether it's more important to have a heart or a brain. I just stopped reading for a second and looked up at my 8 and 6-year-olds and said, "So what do you think? If you could only choose one, which would you choose?" And my firstborn, you know, go get her daughter,
right,
immediately says brains. Like, there's just no question here. And then her sister looks at her and goes, "Well, wait, how would you love anyone? How would you love God?" And then Audrey comes back, you know, "How would you know who to love if you don't have a brain?" So we have this amazing conversation about how you can't let one override the other, how you need to nurture both your intellect and your capacity to love. And then we keep reading and you get to the part where the lion needs courage, and we add to that, we need to nurture our intellect, we need to nurture our ability to love, and we need to be able to face our fears. And I remember thinking on that day, there is no way this would be a normal dinner time conversation.
No, right.
I would never have started this with my kids. The story sort of led us there. And that's the beauty of a conversation that can erupt out of a story. I think the key, though, is that we have to convince our kids that we're interested in what they're thinking and what their experience of the story is without fishing for a right answer. Because in school, a lot of times what they're doing on their comprehension quizzes or their computer programs, whatever their school's doing to help to decide if they've read, to determine, I should say, whether the kids have read the book or not, are asking questions that are, you know, when did this happen? Where was the story set? These are questions that have a right answer.
Right.
Okay, so as adults, we can kind of imagine if our boss at work is drilling us on a training video or something we were required to read, and we know they're trying to find out if we got the right answers, or maybe we have to take a quiz or a test or something. We sort of shut down thinking deeply, and we don't really feel like it's a conversation where we're going back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, when I finish reading a book that turned me inside out, or even watching a movie that turned me inside out, and I call my best friend to find out if she's read it, we don't quiz each other to find out if the other person really understood the book before we start talking about it.
Right.
Because what we're interested in is, what was your experience? And that's what we want to communicate to our kids.
And again, I can't emphasize enough how important it is for children to feel that, A, their parent wants to hear what they have to say, a parent is going to listen to what they have to say, and opinions and feelings are all okay. And particularly in the context of there's no right or wrong answer, we're going to talk about what this character did and what you thought about that character, and would you have done it differently? Or so you're really inviting your child in and saying, "I want to hear you." And what that does to a sense of a child's value and self-esteem in their eyes is enormous. It's enormous. I really can't overstate that. We're quickly running out of time. And I know there are a lot of parents who are listening and go, "Well, that's great. I'm so glad for you, Sarah, that you read to your kids and they really love it. But I'm a single mom or I'm a single dad and I'm exhausted. And this just sounds like a little too much for me." Talk to that parent about just maybe starting. And where would you start? Say if you were a single mom and you have 3 kids, 6, 4, and 2, and she's working and she's tired, where would you start if you were her?
I would start with audiobooks. And the reason why is because we get all the benefits of the stories read out loud, those sophisticated language patterns. We get the shared experience of story, but it's an easier way in.
Yes.
You can fit it in better if you're running your kids to daycare or preschool or grandma's house or soccer practice, whatever. You can turn on that audiobook for a few minutes in the car. With older kids, with teenagers, audiobooks can work really well if you haven't been reading aloud to them for a while and they're just not used to it. We don't want our teenagers to think think, number one, that we're treating them like babies, or number two, which they may think if they haven't been read to in a while, or number two, that we're turning them into our projects, because our teenagers don't want to be our improvement projects, right?
Exactly.
So if we, then it, if you think, okay, if I can turn on, let's say, the Fellowship of the Ring or the Hobbit with my teenagers in the car, and one of them says, oh, I don't want to listen to that, I can say, oh, it's not for you. I wanted to listen to it. But they end up being kind of a captive audience because they're in their seat.
Yes.
And it's really hard not to get pulled into a good story.
Yes.
So with your teenagers, especially if you have kids who are kind of resistant to the idea of being read to, reading something like anything by Tolkien, if you want something more contemporary, Wonder by R.J. Palacio.
Do you have a list of books that you recommend for people? Is there a way people can find out what you recommend at different ages for people?
Yes. So in the Read Aloud family, in the book, the whole third section, there's four chapters, and each chapter is divided up by age range with my favorite read alouds for different ages. And really, when selecting those books, I chose books that read aloud particularly well, because some books read really wonderfully, but they just don't read aloud particularly well.
Yes.
So these are books that are really good as audiobooks or as read alouds. But there also are some really great read aloud recommendations that are free on the website. So all you have to do is you can either text the word books to the number 345-345 to get that book list, or you can just head right to readaloudrevival.com and grab that free book list, which will get you started right away.
Awesome. And I'm so glad you said that, because I think some parents are thinking, well, you know, we all have to start at night at 8 o'clock at night, and everybody needs to be sitting quietly in a circle, and then I'm going to sit down and read to them. And that's really not how it happens. Books on tape are awesome. Everybody's driving in a car. You know, just say to your kids for the next 10 minutes, you know, no headphones in, you know, put your cell phone down, whatever. Or like you said, just say, okay, well, you don't have to listen, but I'm going to. But 9 times out of 10, if you keep playing an awesome story and your kids are within earshot, they will start listening, because they get it, because the richness in stories is so real. It just draws people in. My guest has been Sarah McKenzie. Her book is The Read Aloud Family. It's awesome, awesome, awesome. I highly recommend every parent read it, whether you're a mom or a dad, whether you have 2 kids, 1 child, whether you have a 6-year-old or a 16-year-old. Reading aloud with our kids is an extraordinary way to bond with our kids, to increase conversations, even tough conversations. You won't regret it. Any parent can do it. You just got to start. And Sarah, how can people find out more about you and what you do? And you have a great podcast too. So how can people get in touch with you?
Oh, yes. The best way is just to go to readaloudrevival.com. That's where you can listen to the free podcast, get free book resources, and some tips on how to get started with kids of different ages. So that's just readaloudrevival.com.
Awesome. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on my podcast.
Thank you so much. This has been a blast.
All right, parents, time to get social. I want to hear from you and interact with you. You can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD, or if you have a question, send it to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. Friends, you know who have been listening to me. Often I answer questions on my podcast. Sometimes I answer them on my blogs. So keep looking both places if you asked a question. Hi, Meg. My niece is 6 years old, does not have a father in her life, and is being raised by my sister under my parents' roof, with a lot of help from my mom. My niece has been asking a lot of questions about her dad. We're not sure how to handle it. When she's upset, she says it's about her dad. When she's mad at her mom, she cries that she wants dada. She role plays about him. She's a little obsessed with the notion, and it's been going on for about 9 months. My sister has resolved to just be very honest with her daughter and answer her questions. Her father was never in the picture, and to make the situation worse, he had a terrible accident a few weeks ago after my niece was born. He has brain damage, is physically disabled, and lives in a group home. My sister is totally willing to take my niece to meet her dad. She met him once when she was very little, but we're struggling with how to approach this piece of the puzzle as well. Thank you from Kate. Well, Kate, it's a wonderful question, and you're in a very tough situation in your sister's ears. Here is my recommendation for all single parents where mom is gone or dad is gone. The first rule of thumb is always answer your kids' questions, but answer them in an age-appropriate manner that won't scare them or shock them, in a way that they can understand. That means your answers need to be very simple. Second, it's very important that you keep the child off the defensive when talking about the parent who's left. And by that I mean, when your sister tells her daughter about her dad, she should never do so in a derogatory, cynical, or angry tone. And the reason is, you always want to keep the child free to feel how he or she feels towards the missing parent. If a child picks up that the single parent who's raising him or her is angry at the parent who left, that child will feel like he needs to defend the parent who left, and that will shut off his normal, healthy feelings. So it's really important for your sister to be as neutral as possible when talking about her daughter's dad. What I would recommend she do, particularly in a situation where dad is ill, is very simply say something like this: "Honey, daddy doesn't live with us. Daddy loves you very much, but daddy is not well. And daddy can't take care of himself and has to live in a place where other people can take care of him. And when you're ready and as you get older, if you'd go like to meet daddy, that would be fine. I'd be happy to take you." So I would just say that. I would use his illness as an excuse for why he's not home, and that really lets your sister off the hook. And most importantly, it lets your niece feel that daddy would love her if he could, but he can't because he's ill. Very simple. Keep it that way. Don't push any visits on her. If she wants to go see daddy, that's fine. But I would keep it very open, very simple. Great question. My next question comes from Heidi. "Dear Dr. Meeker, I'm a mom to 5 children, ages 2 to 15. I've been a stay-at-home mom all these years, except for working one day a week as a pediatric physical therapist after my babies turned 1. I continue to work one day a week. I don't regret not increasing my work hours to develop my career more, but lately I've been desiring to increase my work days, but I have conflicting feelings. I also have homeschooled some of my younger children on and off. I think about adding one day per week to my work. I'm having a hard time with the decision, mostly because I wonder if my kids will be missing me and have some emotional issues as a result. Will the children be okay going to school and not homeschooling? And will the children be okay if I increase my work to 2 days per week instead of just 1? My husband is very supportive and actually suggested this change as he sees how much I enjoy my work and how much happier I am on the day I go to work and come home. He also sees the benefit of school for the kids who are homeschooling currently and thinks they will thrive as I will, having a break from being with them all day long." Heidi, that's a wonderful question, and here's my 2 short answers to your questions. My answer is yes and yes. Question number 1, will the children be okay going to school and not homeschooling? Yes, they will. Lots of kids do really well homeschooling. Lots of kids do really well in public schools, private schools, whatever. You've given your kids a great start. And if your husband believes and you agree that now they need to grow and expand, they can do so in a great way at school. Pick your school carefully. Know your teachers well. Know the student-to-teacher ratio. Your kids are used to having, you know, 1 teacher per 4 kids or 5 kids. So make sure they're in a school where they don't have 1 teacher to 35 kids. They might get a little lost there. So if you can find a smaller school, that would be better. Your next question: will your children be okay if you increase your work to 2 days per week? Yes, absolutely. Here's my rule of thumb with working parents. And all parents work. But when 2 parents have to work outside the home, a good rule of thumb is 1 parent or a combination of 1 parent should be with the children more during the week than you are away from them a week. So if you are a mom who works 40 hours a week, you're away from your kids more than you are with them. So what you need to do as a working mom is say to your husband, "We need to figure out a way for you to cut back your work schedule or for us to arrange a work schedule when one of us can be home more so we tip the balance." Kids in general do really well with parents working outside the home as long as the kids don't feel abandoned, they don't feel neglected, and they feel that their parents are with them more than they're away from them. So if you're away from your kids 2 days a week and you're home the rest of the time, you've really tipped the scales. You're with your kids a whole lot more than you are away from them. I also believe that God gives every woman and every man a huge set of gifts. And many of those gifts go beyond parenting our kids. And it's perfectly legitimate and good for men and women to develop those gifts and talents so that later in life, when our kids are grown, you can use them. Think about this. Your intense parenting years are only for about maybe 20 years. But if you live to the average age of the 75 or 80 year old person, that's 60 years where you're not parenting. And you hit 45 and you live till you're 75, that's probably 30 years of potential really good productive work years. So don't feel rushed, but at the same time, if you're antsy and irritable and you need a break from your kids, it's a very healthy, legitimate reason for you to say, you know what, guys, mom's going to go to work for a couple days a week and someone else is going to take care of you and they're going to make sure that you're fine. I will come back. And the truth of the matter is you'll be in a much happier mood when you come back. You just need to get rid of that guilt. You're a very conscientious mom. I can hear the guilt in your voice. You got to ditch the guilt. You got to be confident in telling your kids, this is what mom's going to do. You got to make sure you arrange good childcare arrangements for your kids. Have them go home after school with some friends. Have a nanny come in after school. Whatever you need to do to make sure that your kids are well taken care of, and have a ball. I think it's very smart for you to go back to work. Parents, you know I love answering your questions, so please keep sending them in to me. You can email me any parenting question, nothing off limits, to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. Again, askmeg@megmeekermd.com. I want to thank my guest, Sarah McKenzie. You have to check out her website, readaloudrevival.com. Great podcast, and her book, The Read Aloud Family. So let's recap my points to ponder. 1. Set aside 15 minutes a day for reading to your kids. 2. 15 minutes of cutting out screen time. And 3. Commit to become closer to your kids. So until next time, parents, always remember that great kids are raised, not born.
Hey, this is Bobby, producer of Meg Meeker's Parenting Great Kids podcast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to episode 56, Reading Aloud to Your Kids. And thanks to you, Dr. Meg's Parenting Revolution has grown to over a million downloads. You can like Dr. Meeker on Facebook and follow her on Twitter and Instagram at MegMeekerMD. As a reminder, go to MegMeekerMD.com and sign up for her newsletter for giveaway opportunities and updates. And don't forget to share the podcast, write us a review, and click subscribe so you won't miss an episode.